I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. 30 years ago today, more than 900 people died after they swallowed a fruit drink concoction mixed with cyanide. They were all followers of Reverend Jim Jones, and nearly 300 of them were children. The mass suicide and murder took place at the People's Temple compound in Jonestown, Guyana, a cult-like community cut into the jungles of a tiny South American nation. The messianic leader of the People's Temple was Jim Jones, a self-appointed savior who literally led his people not to the promised land, but to the graveyard.
There were mounds of people, and as we pulled off the surface cover, we found more and more people under the mounds.
And I'd just like to thank Dad for giving us life and also death.
Those who died included his faithful followers, as well as those who had become disillusioned but were unable to escape. Also killed that day were California Congressman Leo Ryan and members of a fact-finding team. They had gone to Jonestown to investigate charges that people were being held against their will. The shocking images of hundreds of bodies shown on television promised a profane place in history for Jonestown. But how and why did such a tragic event happen? Here's NPR's Tony Cox with a look back at Jonestown through the eyes of three people who were there.
I'm a God, and I'm going to stay a God until you recognize that you're God. And when you recognize you're God, I shall go back into principle and will not appear as a personality.
You are God.
But until I see all of you knowing who you are, I'm going to be very much what I am. God Almighty God.
Jim Jones was a self-made messiah whose charismatic quality helped him convince hundreds of Americans, mostly but not all black, to forsake their homes and their families for a better life in another part of the world. People like Juanel Smart of Los Angeles. The mother of four was won over despite her initial suspicions of Jones and his People's Temple.
I heard Jim speaking, and pretty charismatic person, and he said a lot of things that made sense to me.
You got nothing to lose. Who else is going to stand, look you in the face and say, come and I'll give you a job. Come and I'll give you a home. Come and I'll give you a bed. I got nothing but a pension. Don't leave your pension behind. Who else will tell you that?
In 1975, Jim Jones quietly began to move the People's Temple from its Northern California base to Guyana on the promise of creating a community free of racial, gender, class, and cultural discrimination. The full exodus took 2 years as his members believed in Jones's socialist dream that was literally too good to be true.
The community People's Temple members had built a utopia. The infrastructure of Jonestown was 12 miles long, 7 miles wide, and there was a sense of new beginnings.
Jim Jones Jr. was an infant in the early 1960s when he was adopted by Jones and his wife, Marceline. The temple was his life, and looking back, he says that he grew up believing in his father's dream right up to that fateful day in November 1978.
Him having the original Rainbow family or a Rainbow organization, his work with teens, his work with ex-cons, his work with senior citizens, those stories are coming out and people are starting to look at, hold it for a second, this organization really did something. And so they're separating the organization of People's Temple from Jim Jones.
Lay down your life with dignity. Don't lay down with tears and agony. It's nothing to death. It's like Max said, it's just stepping over into another plane. Don't be this way. Stop this hysterics. No way for us to die. We must die with some dignity. Quickly, quickly, quickly.
And we're all ready to go. If you tell us we have to give our lives now, we're ready. I'm pretty sure all the rest of the brothers are with me.
The morbid ending for Jim Jones and his followers in Guyana came when San Francisco Congressman Leo Ryan led a delegation of officials and estranged family members to Jonestown to investigate charges that temple members were being held against their will. By now delusional and paranoid, Jones fought back with deadly consequences.
No way I'm going to do it. I refuse. I don't know who fired the shot. I don't know who killed the congressman. But as far as I'm concerned, I killed him. You understand what I'm saying? I killed him.
Ryan was killed along with several members of his party and temple members as they tried to board a plane to leave Jonestown. Back at the compound, Jones leveled his anger at Ryan as he spoke to members who stood in line to drink the deadly potion.
He had no business coming. I told him not to come.
Nell Smart lost her mother, uncle, and all her children that fateful day, but she was safely back in the States, having fled the People's Temple 2 years before. The turning point for Nell was Jones's duplicity, what he preached he didn't practice, she says, and her realization that the People's Temple was not about the people. It was about the aggrandizement of Jim Jones.
Some of the things that he did, some of the things that he said in the planning commissions was not what he was saying to the general population. It just was not what I thought it was.
30 years later, she is still haunted by the thought that had she been there, she might have been able to save her family.
You go through, you play a lot of scenarios in your mind. You wonder, what would I have done? I don't think, I'm sure I would not have participated in that. I think I would have tried to get my children out of there. I think that sometimes maybe I would have just tried to go up there and kick over the bucket that the solution was in. Maybe I would have tried to go and get a gun, maybe and even shoot Jim Jones or beat him up or something. I don't know. You think of these things. But, I mean, it's all kind of fantasizing what you might have done. But, I don't believe I would have drank that. I'm sure I wouldn't have.
Tim Reiterman was a reporter for the Associated Press who went to Jonestown with Congressman Ryan. That trip nearly cost Reiterman his life after he was shot while standing next to the airplane that was supposed to carry them to safety.
In terms of physical scars, mine were quite minimal. In terms of emotional scars, I think we all, to some degree, have them. However, I was fortunate in that I was a journalist, and I spent a number of years trying to understand what drove the final outcome of People's Temple. And that process of interviewing and going back to Jim Jones's birthplace and tracing his life was a very cathartic exercise.
Reiterman's book, Raven, The Untold Story of the Reverend Jim Jones and His People, was first published in 1982 and is being reissued in paperback this year for the 30th anniversary of Jonestown.
As you may know, he did, for a number of years, rehearse mass suicide, self-destruction of his movement, and he built an us-versus-them view of the world.
Hurry, hurry, my children, hurry. All I say, does not fall into the hands of the enemy. Hurry, my children.
Again, Tim Reiterman.
I think most people in the general public continue to believe that 900 people willingly committed mass suicide, whereas in fact it was mass murder manipulated by the Reverend Jim Jones.
Take our life from us. We laid it down. We got tired. We didn't commit suicide. We committed an act of revolutionary suicide protesting the conditions of an inhumane world.
Jim Jones Jr. was not at Jonestown that day. He and his brothers, Stephen and Tim, were all saved because they were away playing basketball in Georgetown, Guyana's capital city. Jim Jr. was 18 at the time with a pregnant wife. She died with the others. Jones is 48 now with a new wife and three children living in Northern California. His past is part of his present, and he talks openly about balancing his old life with the new, starting with why he kept his father's name, Jim Jones.
You know, it's interesting. I've actually had the opportunity to find my biological parents. And at the end of the day, Jim Jones and Marceline raised me. They gave me my second chance. I mean, I look at a foster child or child in the orphanage in 1960, and my options at that time were to most likely end up in a foster home, most likely end up in drugs or an institution. So I'm very proud of my background. I'm very proud that I was the first Negro or African-American child adopted in the state of Indiana by Caucasian parents. My wife is Caucasian, so I've carried those interracial philosophies on into my life. And I'm very proud of those. And I'm very proud to be Jim Jones Jr. I mean, not that I recognize the person of my father. I felt that he let a lot of people down. He destroyed his own life. And more importantly, destroyed his own dream that he created. But that dream still lives on. That dream to have a world with no isms, to have a world without the sexism, ageism, and racism. I still think that can happen. How we go about it, I may take the different route than my father.
Let's talk first of all about your rainbow family. You were one of several adopted children of Jim Jones. Yes. Tell me what that was like for you back then.
There were seven adopted children and one natural born, which we have a nickname for him as Homemade.
Homemade, that's
yeah, the rest of us were takeouts. But, you know, it's interesting because I have to be candid with you. I wasn't until probably 11, 10 years old that I realized that I was African-American. I just thought I was a little darker than everybody else. I mean, we had Caucasian, Indian, Asian. So there wasn't a clear distinction on being African-American. It was just you were a different shade and pigmentation. So when you look at a rainbow family, we were just a family that we covered the shades of the rainbow.
When you look back over that period of time in your life in Jonestown, what do you remember most?
I think, one, the non-distinction of race. Two is the focus of the family and the focus of the organization was really against the isms that we were living in at that time.
Something about you strikes me, and I want to ask you about it directly, and it's this. I know that it's been 30 years since this happened, and you sound emotionally detached from it now. I know time heals things, but are you still connected to it emotionally in any way?
I guess thank you for the compliment of being emotionally detached. I think what I've done is I put it in perspective in my life. 30 years ago, that was my life. Coming outside the bubble, I had to start a new one. And I've lived more years outside of Jonestown or People's Temple than I've lived in it. So I now have a true balance on it. But I think the emotional attachment is still there. I mean, when I look at my oldest son, Rob, he's named after my first wife's father. Every time I say his name, the thought of my first wife who died in Jonestown is remembered. You had 900 some people actually try to change the world. They failed. The vessel that they rowed was not the right ship, and they failed. But they tried.
In 1978, Jim, you and your brothers Stephen and Tim were playing basketball.
Yes.
The day of the mass suicide. So in a sense, that game saved your life, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It's kind of the irony when we first went into Georgetown to play basketball. You know, we have always been kind of taught by Jim that sports manipulated the African-American. And he saw the opportunity for us to do a public relations, not look like the crazies in the jungle, and look like normal people. And so he saw that. He also wanted us to return and leave Georgetown when the Congressman Leo Ryan came, but we chose not to. So there was a lot of guilt around that by choosing basketball over returning to Jonestown. Honestly, not that I think I could have changed the outcome, but initially I think that was the thought was if we would have been there, it might have been different.
Did you know that it was going to happen?
No. No, I mean, when I was radioed the alert that it was happening, I couldn't believe it. It was very surreal.
What did you do when you heard that this was going on?
Well, I argued with my father and asked him, you know, why were we doing this? Wasn't there other ways? My brothers were at a movie, so I sent a dispatch to get them. And then we ran around a crazy night to the embassy to find out what was going on. How could we get out there? How could we stop it? But the mechanisms that started it had already started.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, Jim, had you been there at the time that the people were beginning to drink this concoction that was going to take their lives in a mass suicide, you would not have done it?
You know, it's funny. I call that the million-dollar question. And I'm placed in a situation to where if I say no, I wouldn't have, I really give no honor to my wife and my family who did. I think the question is when the first person drank the Kool-Aid, may they have been a zealot or a true believer, how could I have said that I'm not willing to lay my life down for the cause? My response to that question is when I was told that they were doing it and we need to do it in Georgetown, we didn't do it.
What did your dad say to you at that when you were talking to him about that?
He said that they were going to visit Mr. Frazier, and Mr. Frazier was the code for laying down your life. And he asked us to get knives or scissors or razor blades and take our lives. And one woman at the Georgetown encampment did that. She did that. She killed her three children and herself. But the other, I want to say, 40-some people didn't.
Let's bring your life forward. You've moved on, obviously. How much of your prior life, Jim Jones Jr., do you carry with you still every day?
I think there's a certain piece I will never lose. I can't give you a percentage of it. I mean, the memories of my prior life as Jim Jones Jr. is always there. I think my social values are still there. Wanting to be involved in my community is still there. I'm Republican, though it's not a good time to be a Republican. And so that's changed a little bit from being a social activist. But
do your kids know about Jim Jones?
Yes, they do. Actually, I was talking to my 14-year-old about it, and he was actually on the internet looking at it the other day.
You wouldn't ever take them down there, would you?
Actually, I did, because I wanted them to actually feel, taste, and touch Jonestown. So when they grew up, they could actually say they were there. I mean, it's kind of funny, but there was a marquee in the pavilion in Jonestown that says, if you don't remember the past, you're doomed to repeat it. I think in some ways, these anniversaries make us remember the past and acknowledge us as a community to not repeat it.
Jim Jones Jr., thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was NPR's Tony Cox speaking to Jim Jones Jr., the namesake of the founder of the People's Temple. For more on the Jonestown anniversary, go to our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. And that's our show for today. Thank you for sharing your time with us. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org.